Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City, NPR News Talk 90.7, putting Delmarva first. It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
The Environmental Protection Agency has ordered that the Chesapeake Bay go on what's called a pollution diet, and Maryland counties have been charged with developing a watershed implementation plan. They have until November 18th to submit a draft of their plans to the Maryland Department of the Environment. Meanwhile, the EPA's plans have also drawn opposition from a lawsuit filed by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Welcome to Delmarva Today, and in studio, two guests so far is Jim Newcomb. He is the district manager for Dorchester Soil Conservation District, and also William Layton, who owns and operates the Lazy Day Farms and is president of Dorchester County Farm Bureau. And he has also been involved in that county's watershed implementation plan. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, let me ask you, first of all, in terms of these counties developing these plans, do you see these plans as being workable, that the county and county officials are getting together and actually being able to do something that will fit sort of everybody's concerns, whether it's environmentalists, developers, and obviously agricultural interests? What about that?
I'll jump in on that since I do work for the county. I also work for the state in soil conservation districts. We have all levels of government represented, federal, state, and county employees. And, you know, like you mentioned, this is a federal EPA-driven mandate coming down to the states, the Bay watershed states. So Maryland's not alone. And then Maryland's pushing it down to the local level, to the county level. And as everything, state to state, we're very different, and county to county, we're very different. Here in the rural area, it's going to be tough for all areas, I guess. But in Dorchester County, Wicomico, those type of counties, the county government isn't consistent in what they control. You mentioned agriculture. County government really doesn't have a lot of control over agriculture. That's at the state level, sometimes federal level. You mentioned septic systems as part of it. And what we're finding out is, you know, septics are managed at the county level, but by the health department, which is a subsidiary of the state. And then you have a wastewater treatment, which in some parts of the state and maybe counties do have wastewater treatment control. But and I'm not real familiar with Wicomico, but I know in Dorchester, the county itself does not control any wastewater treatment plants. So then that leaves you with stormwater management, runoff from urban and developed areas. And at the county does have some rural developments, but those developments, usually the water runs off houses and driveways through grassy areas, and runoff is kind of addressed in those type of situations. But so then the county is not where the intense development is. That's in the cities like Salisbury and Cambridge. So at the county level, when they're being asked, the county elected officials are being asked to pass rules and regulations and come up with a plan, we're finding it difficult to figure out how all the pieces are going to fit together at the county level when sometimes they don't have authority over some of those areas.
Well, let me ask you this, because one of the things, I know there's been some concern in Wicomico County about costs, for instance. But at the same time, as you start looking at the pollution that's been in the Bay, you know, the Chesapeake Bay Foundation is talking about the Bay score has only risen from 27 to 31 out of 100 for a score. Population has doubled in the Bay over the last 50 years. Losses to the Bay can, you know, be, is everything from seafood harvest industry, which has shrunk. We all know that in both states by about 30%. 1974, the Chesapeake Bay boasted 136 oyster shucking houses. Now they only got about like six. It's very clear to me that the way things are right now, we are paying a very high price for this kind of pollution. What do you think?
Well, I certainly think we are paying a high price for the solution for the pollution that's out there. The question is how do you fix it? It's going to cost a lot of money. Farmers' concern is that we're going to bear a lot of that, because to fix the solution from wastewater treatment plants, from runoff, is going to cost taxpayer money. And in a time when counties are having financial problems, having problems getting enough money to do the things they have now, we feel like we're going to take on a lot of that burden when agriculture has done a good job to this point. We're the only sector that has made improvements in reducing pollution into the bay over the last 10 years.
Although you would agree that something has to be done, that we cannot stay the way it is.
It certainly
does.
And
it's going to cost us money no matter what we do.
It certainly does. It certainly has to be done. Certainly from an agriculture standpoint, we just want to make sure we're not bearing more of the burden than everybody else.
And along those lines, I mean, like William pointed out, agriculture has been doing, working on reducing their inputs and their potential for runoff over the last decades. That's what soil conservation districts have been doing since the Dust Bowl. And farmers have been doing it since the Dust Bowl and before, even probably, as new technology, new farming practices become available that are going to benefit them and their land and their operation, they implement them because they want to pass their land on down to the next generation, just like our crabbers and watermen want to continue to pass on their heritage to their young. But you know, at the local level, and the wastewater treatment has also had a reduction because that's been a concentrated point in the state of Maryland and other states where they can say, listen, we got to improve our wastewater treatment. So that's been money well spent over the last year, few years with the state putting money in upgrading wastewater treatment plants. And, you know, a few years ago, I forgot under which administration, the flush tax was passed. And that money is going to upgrade wastewater treatment plants around the state and also assist in farmers implementing cover crop programs, landowners upgrading their septic system. So money is being spent. The question is, you know, how much and where does it get spent? The weakest point so far, the weakest link in this chain so far has been the stormwater runoff. If you look at the numbers, if you look at the data that's been coming out, for every step of improvement agriculture and wastewater treatment have made over the last decade, stormwater management has taken three steps back. So that's a runoff from urban areas. So, you know, you're right. We have to spend money. Farmers are going to continue to do the right thing through soil conservation, through their own management practices. Wastewater treatment plants are still going to be upgraded. But from my point of view is we really got to spend more time, more money, and more attention to the stormwater management aspect from the runoff. Because like you said, the graphs show it. It's right on the BayStat website. For every step we've taken forward in the last decade, Maryland as a whole was taking three steps back as far as inputs to the bay. So we can't continue to do that.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that if I talk to some builders and some developers, they'd say, well, you can't stop, you cannot stop the explosion of the population, right? And we have counties that are very reluctant, for instance, to deal with, say, cluster developments. That's a big debate that's going on here in Wicomico County. And they say, we're doing everything that we can, and particularly in cluster developments, we have large areas where they percolate. They've got large amounts of grass that allows the water to come in. And I'm sure if I were talking to them, they'd probably tell me they're not the problem.
Yeah, they've been builders, and you know everybody's under a lot of, especially in the Bay States, under a lot of regulation, like setbacks, zoning setbacks, septic setbacks, and everything. And Maryland just has upgraded their stormwater management regulations in the last 2 years, when the building boom when the economy's been in a lull. So back, you know, 5 years ago when we were having so much expansion in residential development, you know, those guidelines weren't even in place yet. So the state of Maryland has made improvements, and they are changing the way they have to build sites as well. But it's a balance, and, you know, you're right. It can't all be on farmers. It can't all be wastewater. It can't be on the builders. But I wish Alan Jarrod from Chesapeake Bay Foundation could be with us today, and I hope you get his input in later. But even the Chesapeake Bay Foundation has said that, you know, ultimately, and other environmental groups, ultimately the issue is population, and how we can not control our population, but how we mitigate for its effects, I guess you could say, and the best use of our land in the Chesapeake Bay watershed is a well-managed farm or in forest land as far as mitigating the potential for nutrient reduction. The more people, the more waste, the more pollution into the bay. And we've got to try to figure out how to work that out. And if we can continue to use our farmland to grow houses, to mitigate for forest, to mitigate for wetlands, and to offset things, you know, our number one industry in the state's not going to be there. and we can't continue to grow. We've got areas we can redevelop, you know, and redevelop in an environmentally sensitive way. And I think that's the way we got to balance it out, in my personal opinion.
Well, turn to the farmers, because I mean, one of the things that's struck me is, particularly as we've had a long discussion in this state about how to deal with pollution that comes and nutrient runoff from farms, it seems to me that there has been a somewhat of a shift over the last maybe 20 years or so, away from so much, as it were, imposition and penalties, but there is an effort to try to provide some kind of a final assistance so that you can develop these plants. First of all, is that happening? Is that helping you guys out on the farms in terms of being able to compensate for the fact that you obviously do have to compete with other folks that don't have your particular problems? Is there enough money going into that?
Well, I guess that depends on how much we're being asked to do. The biggest money, I think, or I think the most effective money that's spent is in the cover crop program. I think cover crops take a lot of pollutants out of the soil, carry it up into plants so that they can be used in the next year. Most people, I think, look at that as you're giving money to farmers to plant cover crops. But it costs me about $50 an acre to plant cover crop, to get the seed, to get it in the ground, to kill it again the next year. It's certainly not something we're making money on. But we plant a lot of it because I believe it is great for the Bay. I think it does make a difference, especially in years like this, where we had hoped to plant a great or to harvest a great corn crop. We had fertilizer in the ground. The sun came out. It didn't rain all summer, and we have a horrible corn crop. And there's going to be nitrogen left in the ground that could leach into the Bay, but we've got cover crops there to soak it up. Our biggest fear is that as these things become mandated, EPA is now not just saying, you know, we'd like you to plant cover crop, but we expect you to plant this many cover crops every year. If the state of Maryland doesn't have that money anymore, what happens to us? We're still going to be required to do those things and not have the money to make up for it. And they cost a lot of money. Nutrient management plans, I think they're helping some.
Let me ask you this, because the American Farm Bureau has filed a lawsuit trying to stop the EPA from carrying this out. Where do both of you stand on that? What's your opinion about this lawsuit to try to keep the EPA out and take it back to the states as it has been?
The problem, the biggest problem with me, part of the lawsuit, is that the EPA is not using good science in what they're going forward. And I can tell you, when we went through the process, the EPA is using a model that says, if you implement this practice, you subtract this many pounds of nitrogen or phosphorus or sediment. And as we went through the process, we as farmers could look at it and say, well, you've got these two processes subtracting different amounts of pollutants, but we know these two processes are almost exactly the same. They should be subtracting the same amount. And the people would say, well, we know the model's wrong, but this is what we have to work with. They know that they don't have the correct data in there. They know that their assumptions are not right in there.
Would you rather have them just not be in it and just leave it to the states?
I think the states are better equipped to know what's going on in the state, to be able to deal with each state as an individual, with what we're already doing, especially at the county level. How can the EPA know what each county is working on, what they have to work with, but expect to treat us all the same? But a lot of it has to go back to the assumptions they're using and the data that they're making us stick to just doesn't make any sense.
What do you think about this lawsuit?
Well, you know, I haven't read the lawsuit, and I get frustrated when other people who haven't read the lawsuit say, well, Farm Bureau doesn't care about the Bay. Or you know, but the sad state of affairs, and I think we can all probably agree hypothetically, is that in today's world, a lot doesn't get done unless you have a lawsuit. One side, maybe the water keepers on one side will sue and get one thing done, and then you can't sit down and reasonable people doesn't seem can sit down and around the table and work things out these days. It seems like it has to be worked out with lawsuits, and that's a shame. Because I think, like I said, farmers want clean water. They don't want nutrients that they've paid for leaving their fields. The, you know, recreational crabbers, commercial fishermen, everybody wants clean water. The water keepers, we all have a lot of the same goals, but it ends up in lawsuits. And what William said about the lawsuit, I can show in real numbers here for Dorchester County. I know from a personal in close survey a few years ago that we have about in between a little over 90,000 acres of active cropland in the county. And of that, about over 6,000 acres are in a CREP, Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, which is a buffer program, which is planted in grass for 10 to 15, or trees for 10 to 15 years. So you take 2,000 acres, you subtract 6, you're under 90,000 acres of actively managed cropland. And in the model, they've said that I have 105,000 acres of cropland in the county that I can put poultry litter on, and if I incorporate it properly, I can get credit for it. Well, that's 105,000 is a lot different than the 86 or 87,000 acres that I know that I have. And, you know, I want to say, well, let's fix this number, and then my percentage, my performance of what my farmers are doing in my county will be better. And we go up, well, we can't change that. That's the model. And I think that's where some of the frustration is.
We've been speaking with William Layton. He owns and operates Lazy Day Farms and also president of the Dorchester County Farm Bureau. Also been involved in the watershed implementation plan development. And Jim Newcomb, he is the district manager for the Dorchester Soil Conservation District. Up next, we're going to be talking to Alan Girard. He's a senior land use policy manager at the Chesapeake Bay Foundation. And welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, let me ask you this, just overall, the EPA obviously has taken this on because, in part, the states just have not kept up with the pollution problem. How do you see this plan being implemented? Because some of the concerns I know that I've heard expressed, particularly in the early part of the program, is that part of the problem is implementation, that is perhaps farmers or business folks or developers or even the counties are being asked to do more than perhaps they can do either financially or even physically.
Well, you know, the context here is it relates to EPA simply following the law. You know, all this dates back to 1972 when the Clean Water Act was passed under the Nixon administration. And folks back then said, you know, clean water is our right. It's important. We need to make sure that if a water body is impaired, that there are solutions put into play to clean up those waterways. And that's what the Bay TMDL or the pollution diet is all about. You know, it looks to the 6 Bay states in the Mid-Atlantic, you know, that drain to the Chesapeake Bay region, and says, you know, each state needs to come up with these watershed implementation plans to, you know, clean up the waterways that drain to the Bay. So in Maryland, that's, you know, 92 segments. Well, Baywide, it's 92 segments that are draining to the Chesapeake. And so we'll have plans in each county that will clean them up. And, you know, as you point out, it's important to note that every sector here plays a role. Every sector, whether it's development, wastewater treatment plant from centralized sources, septic systems, lawn fertilizer, agriculture, all of them have a slice of the pie, a slice of the responsibility. You know, frankly, it's encouraging because since 1972, there's been no less than 3 voluntary intrastate agreements designed to try and get the Bay off the Federal Dirties Waters List. We saw it in 1983. We saw it in 1987. We saw it in 2000. You know, and in the 2000 agreement, they said by 2010, we'll get the Bay off the Dirty Waters List. Lo and behold, 2008 rolls around, and it hasn't been done. You know, so right now, what EPA has said and the Obama administration under executive order, you know, look, it's time to follow the law and put these plans in place so that every sector, you know, steps up to the plate and gets something done for the Chesapeake Bay health.
Why do you think it is that the voluntary approach didn't work, the states just getting together and doing this? Why didn't that work? It would seem as if all those states have something certainly of interest, common interest to do to clean up the Bay. What went wrong, do you think?
Well, you know, I think part of it has to do with, you know, the sense of clear responsibility and accountability. You know, EPA has said that there will be consequences for failure to act under this, you know, new program that the EPA is administering, you know, in order to implement the Clean Water Act. And I'll just tell you a story here. I've been attending meetings, you know, both with agriculture stakeholders and folks that deal with other sources of pollution, and I've never seen anything like it. You have folks from government agencies, local stakeholder groups that's, you know, represent the environment, represent development interest, others coming to the table and looking at a county by county basis, you know, what are the numbers that we need to achieve? And, you know, what's different now versus the voluntary agreements is that we've got the numbers on the table. Counties are feeling a level of responsibility to do something about it. And we're just seeing this level of interest and involvement like we've never seen before. It's fascinating. There's no question that it's going to be difficult. It's going to be expensive in some cases. And you're hearing a lot about that around these conference tables in counties throughout Maryland and the Bay Region. And to me, that's very encouraging because it will be hard. And the fact that you are hearing a lot of concern tells me that, you know, the process is working.
Is that one of the arguments that we've heard is that much of what the EPA is requiring is not scientifically based, that it's scientifically flawed. And I've heard that a number of different times. We had some examples of problems in terms of whether there's one kind of acreage as opposed to another. What about that general allegation, which apparently is also part of the American Farm Bureau lawsuit?
Yeah, you know, there have been concerns with the model, and it's important to note, you know, that the loading reductions that each sector is being asked to address are modeled reductions. These are numbers that come from the best science in the world that's worked on estuaries. It's not perfect. It's the best science that we have. And I think part of the reluctance or hesitation from folks that are saying, you know, look, this is flawed. I don't know if we should be doing this is the best science is focused on the Chesapeake Bay. If this Bay TMDL pollution diet succeeds here, we can expect that watersheds throughout the United States, including the Mississippi and others that have similar nutrient pollution and dead zone and fish kill problems, you know, we're going to see it in those other watersheds too. And so, you know, on the national scene, that's really the backstory here is you're seeing some groups saying it's hard. We don't want to see this done nationwide. And therefore, we are going to attack where we can, you know, to try and stop the process. And, you know, to me, that's discouraging because I think everyone thinks clean water is their right and we need to get something done about it. And this process, you know, if allowed to move forward, can succeed.
I saw one estimate. This is a business that could pay up to something like $20 billion in the next 15 years to implement the EPA pollution diet in Virginia and Maryland alone. Very expensive. To say nothing about the impact that it could have on, say, for instance, cash-strapped counties and city governments. I know there was a discussion in Salisbury City Council, where they were looking at this plan and what the city might have to do. And while many of them recognized that they had to move forward, they also said this was going to be a very expensive proposition. How do counties then deal with trying to implement this program at a time when, obviously, we're in an economic downturn and that means less revenue for them?
You know, we've obviously heard that claim, and one of the pieces of the puzzle that is missing when folks talk about the high cost is, you know, what are the benefits? And it's interesting. I was talking with a city engineer over in Ocean City, and a lot of folks who, you know, spend time at the beach over in Ocean City know that when it rains downtown, there's some significant flooding issues that happen in the city streets. And, you know, a lot of the business owners in Ocean City, when they're talking about managing stormwater, polluted stormwater through their existing system, are saying it's bad for business when these city streets flood and we can't, you know, we've got to shut down. People go home because they can't get it up and down the boulevard. And that's a problem. You know, when we manage stormwater properly, when we make the investments that have been, you know, failed to have been made in Ocean City's case and other jurisdictions around Maryland, you know, over the last several years, then, you know, business interests, tourism, you know, the commercial fishing industry that suffers when we don't have, you know, viable aquatic resources in the bay, all of those have, you know, are at an economic disadvantage. And so when we talk about the expense, we need to be very clear that You know, there are economic benefits that need to be factored into the equation as well.
Finally, as you look out at the folks who contribute to the pollution of the bay, is there any particular sectors you think that obviously need clear attention? I mean, the agricultural folks, for instance, say, well, look at the stormwater and development. Business folks say, look at some wastewater treatments or look at, for instance, agriculture. It sounds as if there are people looking at each other saying, well, this is really the problem over here, this person, rather than us. What about that? What kind of contribution do you see these various sectors playing in terms of pollution of the bay?
Well, I mean, that's the beauty of the pollution diet and what this program lays out. It says that every sector plays a role, you know, and the science is there to support that. Now, you know, on the Eastern Shore, agriculture plays, you know, in a relative sense, a bigger role than say urban stormwater runoff, whereas over in Western Maryland, you see urban stormwater playing a bigger role. Every county has its own number for each sector. So, you know, we often hear folks say, well, you know, what about the Susquehanna? You know, 50% of the bay's freshwater comes from the Susquehanna. It's the dairy cows up there. It's not us in here in Maryland. And the facts are, you know, the folks in Pennsylvania are looking at their own pie charts and trying to figure out what they need to do, just like the folks in Maryland here are. So, we can play this pointing the finger game. And, you know, frankly, that's a lot of what's been going on under the voluntary program. The science says here are the loads in where we live, what we need to accomplish in the various sectors. And, you know, I think it's time to face the fact that the loads are there and we need to make some tough choices to get them reduced.
Do you think that the expense of this, we talked about this, particularly for counties or even for the individual farmer who has to, say, compete with other farmers internationally who don't necessarily have the particular problem they do, does this require, do you think, public funds to make sure that this works, particularly for private enterprise here, where they've got to compete with areas that do not have these problems?
Well, you know, the history, you know, you mentioned agriculture as an example. You know, the history of supporting the Chesapeake Bay cleanup from the agriculture sector has involved, you know, cost sharing, public funds. You know, there's a number of programs out there I won't go into now that help agriculture afford the costs of environmental stewardship. You know, over the long term, I think we're going to see that change. You know, particularly if this program succeeds here in the Bay watershed, we're going to see the full costs of, you know, accounting for pollution, dealing with pollution, reducing pollution from the business side of things, built into the cost of production. And I think that's the long term picture. In the short term, you know, I think it's important to put in policies and programs that can help with that transition to a fuller accountability of dealing with the full cost of pollution. And we'll continue to see cost share programs. You know, we've seen a strong cover crop program here in Maryland, up to $12 million from various funding sources put in there. Let's see, I've got here from the Chesapeake Bay Trust Fund, $23.5 million going into support different stormwater retrofits, a few programs for agriculture support there as well. You know, so the public has been contributing financially, and I think we can expect in the short term that to continue.
We've been speaking with Alan Gerard. He's Senior Land Use Policy Manager at the Chesapeake Bay Foundation. In the first half of our program, we talked with Jim Newcomb. He's the District Manager for the Dorchester Soil Conservation District. And also William Layton. He owns and operates Lazy Day Farms and is President of the Dorchester County Farm Bureau. And he's also been involved in that county's watershed implementation program. You've been listening to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Our volunteer producers are Penny Hartman, Kathleen Grout, and Jim White. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC-14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC14.org.